This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan.
Welcome to episode 110 of our podcast, Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. I want to start out tonight by playing a song that my band Damascus Road and I did together. This is our version of A Simple Faith.
You told me my simple faith in Jesus. A passing phase. I would soon outgrow. And you said to me, time would make a difference. And there'd come a day. Say I told you so. That was then, this is now. A lot has changed, but still somehow some things remain unscathed. And I still prefer a simple faith.
I'm titling this episode, A Man of the People, because my guest tonight, Steve Osborne, is a person in our community who is known for loving people and helping people. For the past 22 years, he has been, first of all, the associate pastor, and then they changed the title to executive pastor because Steve has done so many things in the church that are above and beyond the typical job of an associate pastor. He's a man of the people. He's a man who I esteem very highly. In his own words, he has told me that he is the right-hand man of our senior pastor, Carl Morris. He's a guy that just fits that role wonderfully, and God has really blessed him. And I learned a lot of things about Steve as we conversed together on January 3rd, 2023. I asked Steve to help pick some of the songs out for this episode, and he has told me that the song Kalamazoo is one of his favorite songs. So let's listen to Kalamazoo, which is off of my album called Kalamazoo or Beyond the Blue. Right after that, we'll jump into our conversation. Now, do I have this right? If I were to describe an executive pastor,
yeah,
other than doing all the grunt work with a title,
right?
would this be a fair way to say it, that Carl Morris, who is the senior pastor,
that's right,
he's kind of like the chairman of the board, and you're kind of like the COO, the chief operating officer?
I would think that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
And I heard the story one time, a long time ago, about an organist, a pipe organist, and he was doing a big concert. And so this guy was doing a big concert in a church with a big pipe organ. And it was the kind where you had these pedals, you know, and you had somebody underneath it.
Right.
The player wasn't doing it with his feet. You had a guy laying underneath there, pushing the pedals, sweating and pushing and pushing. And the organist would say, "Now my next number is something by Mozart." And then he said, "Thank you. And so for my next number, I'm going to do this. And my next song." And after about three songs, the organist felt somebody jerk his pant leg. And he looked down and he said, "Psst, if the next song isn't our next number, your concert just ended."
Yeah.
So what you do, and you do a lot of things, but you don't get the credit sometimes because you're not always on stage, or you are plenty of times.
Right.
But you're doing all sorts of things behind the scenes.
Right.
And our pastor has been great at always recognizing you and appreciating you and letting everybody know how valuable you are. You're very valuable to him, and he's valuable to all of us. But you guys are a good team, very good team.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think you told me y'all have never had a crossword in all these years.
I don't think so.
And I know about you that you don't just hang out with the saintly people.
No.
You have a motley crew of friends.
I do.
That aren't even interested in God.
That's right. I tend to be drawn like Jesus to those people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just love them.
I mean, I know there's all sorts of stories of people who just had no interest in God, but you became their friend, and over a period of time,
years,
they came to Christ,
right.
Sometimes on their deathbed, probably.
Yes. Yeah.
And I got to say this about you, okay? I was going to have to say it sometime, but you are a servant. I want my crowd to know this. So a few years ago, it was summertime, and it was getting late. It was getting dark.
Oh, it was dark.
And I jerked the water, the garden hose, thinking there was a kink in it. And next thing you know, I heard Niagara Falls through the foundation. And we had jerked the faucet off the pipe, and there's just gallons of water. And I'm not the most handy. I don't know if you know that, Steve.
No, you're very handy.
I'm not very handy. I can play a piano or type a keyboard, but put a hammer and nail and I drop the nails. And so anyway, I thought, what are we going to do?
Right.
So Trish said, let's call Steve. He'll know who we can call. And so you gave me the name of a plumber. Of course, it was Saturday when it's hard to find anybody.
That's right.
Raining.
It was pouring rain.
And the next thing I knew, you drove into my driveway and said, we're going to fix it. Okay. Now, it was about 9 or 10 o'clock by that time.
Yeah, it was.
On a Saturday.
Well,
you know, but you and your son-in-law, Justin.
Yeah, Justin.
Crawled under that house.
Right.
And fixed it. And I've never forgotten that because, I mean, that's what a servant would do.
And I have to say, under your house is the cleanest of any house I've ever seen. I always told Justin, I said, listen, man, if anything ever goes bad and we don't have anywhere to live, we're going to move under Lawrence's house.
Yeah, we do have it.
It's nice.
What are they, you know, plastic
something
all through the house.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's just another day in the life of Steve Osborne. You do stuff like that all the time.
Yeah.
When we needed chairs for my 70th birthday party.
That's right.
I mean, you were the one putting the chairs out. And so you are a greatly loved man by a lot of people and by me, too. So
well, I love you, too.
I just want to say that about
you. I love people,
you know. Yeah. It's obvious you do.
Yeah. And, you know, I thank God for Pastor Carl. Our relationship is extremely unique.
Yeah.
I have been asked dozens of times, when are you going to have your own church?
Yeah.
And I always say, well, I do have my own church. It's Abundant Life.
Well, see, there's so many people that in your position, they view their position as a stepping stone.
Yeah.
And I've seen youth pastors do that.
Right.
It's just a stepping stone to get to the top position. But I've never felt that you were ambitious or conniving or you've never undercut.
No.
And I'll tell you something. That's one of the greatest treasures in my life, to be part of a church
right.
where the leadership is steady Eddie and a servant. And so anyway.
Yeah.
That's there goes a real Christian man. Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you some things, Steve.
Right.
You didn't always live in Florence. Where'd you grow up? Where were you born?
I was born in Gaffney, South Carolina, in the upstate.
Gaffney is sort of near Greenville, right?
It's in between Greenville and Charlotte on I-85.
Okay.
Yeah.
Peaches. It's
That's
known
right.
for peaches,
That's right?
Okay.
Cajano.
Did you grow up in town?
I did. I grew up on 313 4th Street. And it was the street on the wrong side of the tracks.
Oh, the street on the wrong side.
Yeah, there were two beer joints in town. There's a white beer joint where all the white guys went and got drunk. And then there was a black beer joint where all the black guys went and got drunk. And I grew up right down the street from the white beer joint.
So you grew up on the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah.
A lot of unsavory people walking up and down the street.
Oh, yeah. Really. The bootlegger lived at the top of the hill. The guy across the street sold pills. Two houses above me, you know, this is back when glue was a big deal. They would sniff glue and get high.
Did any of them ever try to lure you into that?
Oh, no. My dad was a pastor. My grandfather was a pastor. And, you know, to me, they were just good guys. Just all messed up, broke.
So
even back then.
Both of them were pastors.
Yeah.
I was trying to think coming over here.
Yeah.
Was it your dad or your grandpa? But both.
Both of them were. Yep.
It's hard, isn't it?
Being a pastor's kid?
Yeah.
It was on us, you know, for me and my brother, I think, but not on my kids.
How'd your sister get out of it?
She was so much younger. She was so spoiled.
Tell me what was hard about it for you.
For me, just always under the spotlight, anything you did. I mean, you know, we grew up in a conservative home, in a conservative church, and it was pretty much ran by the deacons and anything you did, if it didn't line up with thoughts and their processes. And I grew up in the 80s when everybody was changing their hair color and wearing zipper jackets and all kinds of stuff. And
oh, they couldn't do that because...
Oh, no, you didn't. Well, we did. That was the problem. You know, we did do it and made it a little bit probably difficult.
You had a different kind of hair color?
Oh, my hair's been all kinds of different colors. That's right.
Okay, so do you have people say, when you misbehave, it reflects on your dad?
Oh, yeah.
It makes you... And so there's this great pressure to be this perfect... You can't even be a normal kid, can you?
Well...
I mean, they don't want you to be a normal
right,
kid.
Right, yeah, I heard that.
Did you rebel against that?
I did. I think I did. I never wanted to be a pastor.
That was
the last thing in my heart that I ever wanted.
Yeah. So you went three times a week, I would assume.
Three times a week, Sunday night.
And Wednesday. What do they call it? It's a Baptist church, right?
It was.
What do they call it for the kids? Training union.
I had training
union. I never knew what Sunday training union. What is a training union?
I don't know. You know, we just went and hung out with my buddies, you know, and then we'd go get pizza.
So was your grandpa your pastor or was your dad your pastor?
Both. They both were.
Was your dad the executive pastor?
No. They actually, my dad, my pawpaw, as we affectionately called him, he pastored an independent Baptist church called Johnson Memorial Baptist Church. And when my dad got the call to be in the ministry, he started helping pawpaw out.
Okay.
And then he was called on to be a pastor at another church. And so
Mr. Johnson, was it named after a former pastor?
I do not know. I think it was, but I am not sure. But it was a little block building. You know, we were talking about having to raise the windows to let the air in, put in fans in the windows. And I remember those.
I preached this little revival in North Carolina one time.
Yeah.
And I noticed there was this big painting. Not a painting, it was a photograph. But I mean, a huge picture on the wall.
Yeah.
Right behind the pulpit, and it was a former pastor. And sometimes when you go to sing or speak at places, the pastors really open up to you. And he said, "Oh my goodness,
He said, we had this pastor who founded the church, and when he retired, he didn't move away. He just stayed.
Right.
And said, everything I did, people would look back at him to see if it was okay with him.
So, right.
And said, he finally died. And said, then they put this big picture overlooking my shoulder. Now, every time I preach, the founding pastor.
He's right behind me. He's right behind me.
Okay, I got off the subject there on Mr. Johnson. Yeah. So Johnson Memorial Baptist Church.
Johnson Memorial.
Big church, little church?
Small church. Mill Hill type church.
A what kind of?
Mill Hill type church. People who worked in the mill and lived in the city right around that area would come to church there.
So not a whole lot of rich people.
No.
So did you see a bird's eye view? Did you see people hurt your dad, mom?
Sure. Yeah.
Did it make you angry?
Yeah. Yeah. And you the bad thing about it is you would cast that anger on towards God. You know,
yeah.
You would get mad at God. Well, God, why are you allowing this to happen? And why are you allowing that to happen? And, you know, so the anger towards the people, you know, and these were my friends, too. You know, these people that were in the church, you know, I was playing with their kids and growing up with their kids. And
knowing that the parents were hurting your
parents. Right, right.
I know pastor's kids that overheard the parents talking about being hurt, or I knew one guy that his parents didn't have enough money to buy Christmas presents,
right.
And
right.
He heard his dad crying, you know, through the other room or from the top of the stairs. And it's caused them to, like you say, walk away from God. You know, if this is what a Christian is, I don't want it.
Right.
Did you go through any feelings like that toward God?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And growing up the way we did, you know, and where we grew up at, you know, it was modest. You know, our home was modest and that type thing. But we always, my parents always said, you need to go to college, you need to get a good education, and you can go make some money, make a lot of money. So me and my brother, we both wanted to be in the medical field, and that's, you know, that's where my focus was at. And whenever I got out of high school, you know, I found me a job working in the hospital.
So did you walk away from the church, though? Did you quit going to church?
No. By then, I was married. Lori and I got married young,
yeah,
like 18 years old. And so, no, I didn't walk away from the church. You know, I probably was wild as a buck, but I didn't walk away from the church.
So
I started going to the Four Square Gospel Church.
Okay.
Which was a major difference from what I was, you know, what I grew up in.
So when did you start a relationship with Christ? When were you born again?
Listen, I remember being 9 years old, getting my daddy up in the middle of the night and saying, Dad, I have got to be saved.
In the middle of the night?
In the middle of the night. Could not sleep. I knew the Lord was dealing with my heart. I knew what it was, you know, even at that age. And I've never felt like the Lord left me. You know, I felt like he's always been right with me, even whenever I was doing things I shouldn't. You know, I could still talk to him. He was still there.
Yeah.
But I remember being like 18, 19 years old, and we were doing something at church, and the pastor was talking about our relationship with the Lord. And I knew mine was not right. And it was at that point I said, you know what? I've got to make this right. I got to do my part and ask God to really help me. And it was at that point I started, you know, focusing on my relationship with God, focusing on my relationship with my wife, my kid.
This is Lawrence Tuning. You're listening to a conversation I had with Steve Osborne, who is the executive pastor of the church where I attend. Steve told me that having been brought up in the church and having a father and a grandfather who were pastors, he grew to love many of the old hymns in the hymn book. So I want to sing the old hymn, Jesus Paid It All.
Small, child of weakness, watch and pray. Find in me your all in all. Jesus paid it all.
Well, you know, Lori and I were junior high school sweethearts. And we were sweethearts all the way through junior high and then high school, and then got married out of high school.
You go to Gaffney High School?
Went to Gaffney High School, went to West Junior High, and then Gaffney Senior High. Big football town.
And you guys started being sweethearts in?
Seventh grade.
Seventh grade?
Yep. Sure did. She was walking down the hall holding another guy's hand.
Did you ever break up with her?
One time. Yeah, that was a mistake.
How long?
Not long. Not long.
Well, you got a great wife.
I do. She is phenomenal.
And, okay, so.
And she helped me, Lawrence. She really helped me, you know, get on track with the Lord. It was her prayers and her faithfulness to the church. I seen it in her. And I would be out just doing my thing with my buddies. And, you know, she would be faithful to church and faithful getting our little girl, Amber, ready to go to church. And I would watch her. And she never harped on me about what I was doing or how I was. And
so you were kind of living the worldly life, as we would say. It sounds like you really loved both your dad and your grandpa.
Oh, yeah, I do.
And that you had respect for them.
I do, still.
Now, is both of them still alive?
My dad is, and my dad is still pastoring. He pastors a small little church in the mountains. It's a little white church tucked away in the mountains, probably holds 50 people. And it's a wonderful little church there. And
in North Carolina?
And, yeah, the foothills of North Carolina up towards Chimney Rock. And the people there are just sweet, sweet people. and good people, good hearts. And
well, you got to take your hat off to these faithful people that have done it for years and years and years.
Yeah. And my dad also serves as the chaplain for the sheriff's department up there in his hometown, and that keeps him busy. He loves it.
I know people who became pastors because they felt a call. God called them and said, you're to change everything. You're to go this direction. I know others that were just faithful at doing whatever God told them to do, and little by little, without some major experience like of the Lord speaking, you find yourself ending up there just by obeying God.
Right.
How was it for you?
That's probably how it was for me. You know, even as a kid, I always loved people. You know, even the bad people, I just loved them. And when I worked at the hospital, it was a genuine concern for the people. It wasn't about the money. It wasn't about anything. It was about I really did love the people. And I found out, especially during the holidays, that most of the people that were in the hospital were just lonely, you know, in our little town. You know, they didn't have family, so they would go in the hospital. And, you know, and I loved that. And, but I was trying to get my relationship on track with God. And there was a lot of things going on there at the hospital, like General Hospital. And it would be extremely difficult on my marriage should I have stayed there. And so I was praying about it in the best way that I could.
Now, what do you mean extremely difficult? Temptations?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was the only guy working there, I think, most of the time. around my group of peers, you know.
Little foxy nurses flirting with you and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I got electrocuted one time, Lawrence. And this is after I left the hospital. And, you know, all my friends at the hospital, most of them were female. And I remember the doctor sent me to, after I came to, he sent me over to the hospital, called Lori and says, listen, I'm going to send Steve over to the hospital and they're going to check him out pretty good. Well, they rolled me in ICU and put me in a bed. Had no clue I was going to ICU. And they wouldn't let Lori come in, but all of my friends were in there in the bed with me. We were just sitting around talking, you know.
In the bed.
Sitting up in the bed with me, you know. And I remember Lori coming in and she was upset. She was extremely upset, you know. But so, I had already left the hospital by then. My friends were just concerned.
So did you make the decision, I'm going to get out of the hospital work? And what kind of job did you do after that?
I went into public utilities.
Okay.
Yeah. It was
In Gaffney.
Yeah. I was actually working at the hospital one night, and I'd been praying about, you know, seeking other employment opportunity. I knew that God still wanted me to work with people, and that for my own spiritual growth, I probably needed to step away from that. And I remember a lady in the hospital, she was a good friend of mine. And she asked me one night, Lawrence, she said, do you believe that there are such things as demons and angels? Well, I said, well, I do believe that. And, you know, I'm going to church with my wife pretty regularly now, and those folks believe in it. And so I trust them enough to know that, hey, this is real, you know, because we're spirits. And she said, she went on to tell me about, she went home and went to sleep one night, a couple nights before this conversation. And she said that she was awakened by her dog, and the little dog was running around and around in the floor just to barking. And she saw this big apparition pulling a man through her house. So she called her pastor up, and the pastor said, you know what, that didn't happen. It was a dream. You know, you just need to go back to sleep and rest. And she said, what do you think about that, Steve? And I said, well, I'm not sure it was a dream, because your dog was acting up and barking at whatever it was that, you know, going on there. So it was like, you know, the following weekend after we had had that conversation, and I'd been praying about leaving the church, leaving the hospital, I got a call to come to the emergency room. And I worked trauma, and I ran down to the emergency room there and had all my crash carts set up and that kind of thing. And they rolled this kid in who had committed suicide. And they had told me that this kid had committed suicide, and they were bringing him in and that kind of thing. And I remember all the stuff that we did on this kid. And he was just gone. You know, he was gone. And I was left alone in the room with this kid. And it was like, at that point, I knew that I needed to step into something else. And it turned out to be the lady's son.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was like.
And so she saw the separation, right, pulling somebody, and that was her son,
it was,
I guess.
It was, yeah. Yeah, that's how I saw it. And I remembered, I need to learn more about this kind of thing so I can help people, you know, if that ever, you know, be able to help them in that area spiritually. And that was the night.
That's a wild story.
It was. And that was the night that I turned in my notice. And I went from that job, which had a lot of prestige, a lot of clout. Everybody knew who I was. Everybody, I mean, I was, it's a small town. So,
yeah,
you know, I stayed at that hospital more than I stayed at home. And I went from that to reading water meters and dipping water out of a water meter box with a green bean can. That was my tool, a screwdriver and a green bean can. And the way that the enemy would just play with my mind, you know, you gave up all that to come out here and do this. I drove the same little sports car. I lived in the same house. I ate the same food, you know, and the Lord just sustained us through all that. And through that change, it led me to Florence.
Okay.
I worked myself up in the utility departments in Gaffney and started working at the wastewater treatment plant. It was science, so I was all about that, science and that kind of thing, and math, and I loved that. And then there was a job. I told my cousin, I said, the Lord has told me that he is going to promote me, and it is time for that promotion. And so whenever the Lord told me that, there was a job opened up where I was working. And I said, that must be my job. That is a huge promotion, and I believe that's it. Well, lo and behold, they gave the job to somebody else. Super nice guy. You know, I like the guy. And never had any resentment about any of that. And I was praying, and I felt the Lord say, you need to look into Florence, South Carolina.
Just out of the blue.
Out of the blue.
The word Florence came to your mind.
Yeah, sitting at my desk.
Two and a half hours, 3 hours away?
3 hours away. I didn't even know where it was. I didn't know anything about Florence. And so I did have a directory in my desk drawer. I pulled it out, opened it up to the City of Florence Utility Department.
So wait a minute. Let me back up.
Yeah.
You're just praying.
Mm-hmm.
And just out of the blue.
Out of the blue.
Of all the cities in South Carolina.
All the cities.
3 hours away. You've never been there. You didn't know where it was.
No.
But that word kept coming in your mind.
Right. Yeah. And I told my cousin who worked with me at the same time. Look at there. That's my old brother there calling me. We talk every day. But I said, I believe the Lord is telling me this so strong that I'm going to call down there right now and get my job. I picked the phone up, called, and I remember I talked to a young lady named Princess who was great.
Did you know there was a job opening in Florence?
No, I had no idea. I called her up and I said, I told her my deal. I told her what I was looking for. And she told me there were no job openings. She said, I'm so sorry, there's no job openings in that department. I said, daggone, I just can't hear the voice of God then.
I bet you the enemy was saying,
well,
you made a fool of yourself.
He didn't have time, because as soon as I hung up the phone, the Lord said, call right back.
Oh, no.
So I picked up the phone and I said, hey, I got to call him back. That girl, I don't think she knows what she's talking about. So I called the number back and I got a lady named Christine. And, oh gosh, she was so much fun on the phone. I told her what I wanted or what I was looking for and about moving. And we talked for 45 minutes. And she says, well, we've got several openings in the department. We've got a maintenance job opening and we've got a manager's job opening. She said, which one would you like? And I said, which one pays the most? And she said, well, the manager job. I said, well, then that's the one I want. And through a series of events, we put our little house up for sale, and it sold like almost instantly, which was unheard of. And we had to move in a bedroom. Me and Lori and our kids moved into a bedroom in her mom's house, and we lived there. And oh my goodness, it was a trying time because, you know, I was expecting to move. You know, I had come down for an interview that was to last 30 minutes, and it lasted almost 6 hours. And fell in love with the city. In that 6 hours, just fell in love with the city, fell in love with the people. And but it just didn't seem to go anywhere after the interview. It just kind of like flopped. And for 2 months, and I'd already sold my house.
Yeah,
I mean, we believed it so much, we sold our house. Our stuff was in boxes, and then I went and I had a little piece of property, and Lori and I said, well, we'll just put some mobile home on that piece of property, you know? And so I went and I bought this mobile home, paid the down payment on it and all that kind of stuff, and thought they would roll out that mobile home and we'd just be happy living right there in the country. And like right after I did that, I was getting ready to go to bed and the phone rang. It was late and they called and offered me the job in Florence and said, it's yours. And I just bought that home. And I knew when I did it, I probably shouldn't have done it. You know, it was just trying to do things, you know, how we do. And it was like, I had to go back down there and I told the owner of the company there, I said, listen, I disobeyed God whenever I came here to buy that home. And you have a check for my down payment and you can keep it. I just can't have the house because God said, I can't have that house. I'm moving. And the man, he was a Christian guy. He opened up the drawer of his desk and he took my check out. He said, I never deposited it because the Lord wouldn't let me.
Oh my.
And he gave me my money back and he says, hey, keep me posted on what's going on with you because it's going to be great. And so I worked at the city for 5 years, loved it. And then the job opened up here and I pastored those guys at the city, you know. But looking back over my life, Lawrence, I've been that way my whole life, even in the hospital.
Yeah.
And then the next stage and the next stage.
It's obvious.
Just about people.
Jesus, Jesus.
told you I'm through. And I trust that you're all moving up too. Moving up too.
Tell me about the what you went through with your son and his motorcycle accident.
Oh, man. A miracle. You know, I look over my life, and there's just been so many miracles, one after the other.
You've got two daughters and one son.
Two daughters. I've got my son's in the middle. And it was February, I think it was February the 12th, 2012, at 5:38. I was sitting in my chair at home. I just got home and sat down in the recliner, and I had talked to my son's name is Grayson. And he was the reason we had the farm, really. You know, it was in his heart, you know, to have horses and all that kind of stuff. And we wanted to do it, and my wife loved it. But anyway, we were, he had gone back to school to cut hair. Out of the blue, I mean, he was a cowboy, and but he wanted to cut hair. And so he had graduated, and he had a F-350, and he wanted a motorcycle. So, you know, he loved motorcycles, and we went and got him a motorcycle. And it was in February, and it was a warm day. And so he drove the truck home, and he said, I'm going to take my bike back to work because it's so pretty today. I'm just going to ride my bike. And so he was coming home, and he stopped to make a left-hand turn to come down the road we live on. And there was oncoming traffic. He was going to wait for them to pass. And a young lady was texting and driving and speeding at that, and hit him at a dead stop. And it catapulted his body about 100 foot down the road and the motorcycle 200 feet.
Mm.
And knocked his helmet off. When I arrived there, the highway patrolman called me and said, your son's been involved in a wreck. But Lawrence, I wasn't shocked because I had a dream like a week before. And I saw Grayson in my dream on his knees with his hands lifted. So I wasn't shocked by that. And I said, well, is my boy alive? And they said, you just need to go to the hospital. Well, lo and behold, my wife pulls in the yard. I just said, listen, Grayson's been in a wreck. We got to go. And when we get to the end of our street, I look across and there's a mile of ambulances and fire trucks one way, and then highway patrolmen's out there putting dots in the road. And come to find out, that was the fatality team. I seen my son's helmet laying in the road, and I seen his shoes laying on the side of the road.
Mm.
The impact knocked him out of his shoes. Well, I never said anything, but knowing what I knew from working in the hospital, I knew my boy was probably dead because it knocked him out of his shoes, and it knocked him out of his helmet. And I looked over on the side of the road, and my son was laying on the side of the road, and they were working with him. And I fought my way through. The cops didn't want to let me over, and I got over there. And he looked at me, and he had a tear rolling down his eye. And he said, you know, I'm not afraid of dying. I said, I know that. He said, but, oh, Dad, I hate a shot. I hate shots, Daddy. And they put him in the ambulance.
How old was he at the time?
Grayson was 20 years old.
So I'm not scared of death, but I don't want that shot.
I don't want a shot, Dad. But you know I'm not afraid of dying. And I mean, he was laying on the side of the road thinking he was going to die. And they threw him in the ambulance. And I called Pastor Carl. And it just so happened to be the weekend that Laverne and Anita Tripp were here. And when we got to the hospital, they put us in the room where they come to tell you the bad news. And I knew that because I had sat in that room with so many people over the past, you know, years. Mm-hmm. And I never said anything to my wife. And my kids all started showing up. And my son-in-law said, well, what are we going to do if they come out and tell us Grayson didn't make it? And I said, Justin, we're going to live, man. We're going to live. We're going to live for Jesus. We've got peace in our heart. Grayson is squared up with God. And he's good. And so we sat in the room and thank God for our wonderful church family that was all there supporting us and our friends that were there. And the doctor came out, the ER doctor came out, and he was giddy and he was laughing. I thought, well, that's different. And he literally said, I don't get to tell people this kind of news, but your son, he's not going to die. He doesn't have one broken bone.
Wow.
But he does have some brain trauma. And we'll just have to see how that goes. But if you want to go back and be with your son, going back in there. And when we got in there, you know, he was still in a brace, neck brace and all that. And the doctor came in and said, take all that off. You don't need it. Well, they put him in ICU. And that in the middle of the night, we knew that something was not right with our son. You know, something was not right. And he started to crash in the middle of the night. He had some brain swelling and a bleed deep in his brain, and they couldn't get it. But long story short, you know, God, he saved our son. And our son is a lot different now than what he was before the wreck. He's more outspoken. The filters that he used to have, are they're not there. You know, but it has been an experience to have a son that has a traumatic brain injury. And if you've ever saw 50 First Dates with Adam Sandler,
yeah.
You know how the girl had to make him fall in love every day.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of like how Grayson is, except his is about every 5 days. It's like his memory is just real splotted. Now, before the wreck, if you talk to him about what we had for Christmas dinner the year before the wreck, 2 months before the wreck, he'll tell you everything we had, just like it was yesterday.
Even now.
Even now. You can tell him, and he'll.
But if you ask him what he had 2 days ago,
7 or 8 days ago, what were you doing? I'm not sure about that. You know, I'm not sure, Dad. You know, but God has been so faithful in that miracle in Grayson's life, and you know, God sent him. He's always wanted a wife, and God sent him a wonderful wife.
Yeah,
and
two kids,
two great boys. Two great boys, and God is just absolutely wonderful.
It's a testimony to me, not only of God, but of the love of a mother and a father and siblings. I mean, you all are such a support system for him and his wife. And
yeah, and Grayson loves you, man. You know that.
I love him too.
That guy loves you. And, so I watched God through all of that, all the therapy, two doctor's appointments a day for 5 days a week, you know, for 2 years.
Yeah.
And you know, it was amazing. He told me, he said, Dad, I just bought some new shampoo and some new conditioner in my book bag. And he said, when I got hit, he literally totaled that girl's car with his body. And he said, but when I got hit, an angel caught me and laid me on the side of the road. And even though it knocked me out of my helmet and all that, it didn't bust the shampoo nor the conditioner that was in my book bag. You know.
And you know, he probably is right.
He is right. He's 100% right.
What are the odds that no bones will be broken?
Yeah. What are every time, I mean, it was a big ordeal, you know, but every time we would sit around with the doctors and stuff, they would always say, there's something divine about this because his neck should have snapped.
Yeah.
There's something so divine in this. You know, there's something so divine that two cars behind him, there was a pediatrician that was there immediately. There was a nurse that was there immediately. Steve, there's just something divine about this. So even in all that, it's been such a testimony.
Sure
of,
has
of
been.
God's goodness.
Well, I said before, there goes a real Christian man, and you are. And I've enjoyed talking to you. I've learned things about you I didn't know.
Well, mercy. Hey, life is good, Lawrence.
Yeah.
God's grace is good.
But you make life a little better. You do. Hey. And here's the thing about you, Steve. And we'll kind of close with this. Although, is there anything else you want to say to the people listening that we didn't cover?
Well, this is 2023. We are going into a brand new year. And there's so much of God's goodness that we have yet to experience. that we should expect that. We should expect God's goodness to be flowing in our lives, and we shouldn't turn our heads away from those that are not experiencing it, but right. get close enough to them to let them see it.
And you're a living testimony,
yeah.
an example of someone who does that.
Yeah.
I was going to close with this, Steve. There's an old preacher named Vance Havner. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Yeah.
I think he was a Baptist. But he preached up in the mountains
yeah.
of North Carolina. And he wrote many books. He was very famous later on in life. But he told a story one time about a pastor in this little church in the mountains. And he noticed that everybody he talked to just about kept referring to this pastor who had been there many years ago. They always talked about him. And he sort of took a look at the history of that church. And there were many guys that had more education. And one day he was talking to an old farmer. And he said, what was it about this certain guy? I forget the guy's name. He said, was he a good preacher? And the guy said, well, he was okay. said, well, was he educated? He said, no. And he kept trying to say, well, everybody talks about this guy. What a great pastor he was. They say he was the best. He said, what is it about that man that everybody gravitates to? And he thought for a minute. He says, well, he just loved us.
Mm.
He just loved us.
Yeah.
And you are a guy that is known for that. You love people. Mm. And because of that, people love you.
Yeah.
And I love you.
I love you too.
All right. Let's end this. And I'm going to go out with, there goes a real Christian man.
All right.
Okay, let's go eat.
Let's go eat, man. Tubbs is calling.
Again, stranded in Nebraska, needing some money, needing a friend. I was feeling sad and lonely as I stood beside the road, when a bald-headed man in a pickup truck picked me up and took me home. I was hungry, tired, and cold. And I thought this man was kind of different to pick a tramp right off the street. Then he said, my name is Billy, I'm gonna fix you something to eat when we get home. There goes a real Christian man. I said, there goes a real Christian man. Well, he told loved me, how the Lord had changed his life. As we walked into the kitchen, he introduced me to his wife. He said, as long as you're in these parts, you'll always have a beer. Oh, I knew I'd met a Christian by the things he did and said. Oh, there goes a real Christian man. So, and then I got back on the road, and I never got saved 2 years later in a park in Buffalo. Well, I've seen a lot of phonies, a lot of hypocrites telling lies, but I know I've seen one Christian, Billy, I'll love until I die. Oh, there goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man.
there goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian man. There goes a real Christian
friends. I will sing you a song.